Managing passwords can be a real headache, right? Think about it. Every website requires a new password. Each one needs to be unique, secure, and somehow memorable. But there's a better way. Welcome to the world of 1Password, where your entire company can generate strong, unique passwords, store them securely, and access them across any device without ever needing a reset. Imagine never having to click Forgot Password again. With 1Password's award-winning design, managing passwords becomes a breeze for you and your entire team. It's trusted by millions, including top companies like IBM and Slack. Here's the best part. My listeners can try 1Password for free for 2 weeks. Right now, get your free trial at 1Password.com/productiveconvo. Secure your passwords and simplify your online security with 1Password. Are you a small business owner struggling to find the right talent for your team? I've been there, and I know how challenging it can be. That's why I recommend LinkedIn Jobs. It's not just any job board. It's a community where you can find professionals who are the perfect fit for your business, many of whom aren't checking other job sites. In fact, 70% of LinkedIn users aren't visiting other leading job sites, making LinkedIn your best bet for finding top talent. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can post your job and reach qualified candidates quickly. 86% of small businesses find a qualified candidate within 24 hours. And now, you can post your job for free at linkedin.com/conversation. That's right, for free. Don't miss out on finding top talent. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/conversation today. Terms and conditions apply. Starting an online business or expanding your physical storefront online has never been easier thanks to Shopify. This global commerce platform supports you at every stage of your business journey. From launching your online shop to managing a million orders, Shopify is there to simplify and accelerate your growth. It's not just about selling products. Shopify helps you manage every aspect of your business with their all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. But that's not all. Shopify helps you convert visitors into customers with the best converting checkout process on the internet, which performs up to 36% better than other platforms. And now, a special offer for my listeners. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/timecrafting, all lowercase. Whether you're just starting out or looking to scale up, Shopify is the perfect partner for your business.
Meal planning is important because it prevents us from being a disappointed wreck when dinner time comes around and we have no clue what to make, or even if we have the ingredients to make the meal. It's a time and a money saver, but most importantly, it frees up valuable brain space. Creating a meal plan prepares us for the week to come and gives us peace of mind that we're organized and can feed ourselves and our family. That's why I do it, and that's why Plan to Eat helps me do it. Your subscription includes access to the Plan to Eat website and fully featured mobile apps on iOS and Android. And Plan to Eat gives you the tools to clip and organize recipes from any website, the ones your family loves and that fit your dietary preferences and needs. And you can create a meal plan around your schedule. Then what happens is the Plan to Eat software automatically creates an organized shopping list based on your plan. So sign up for your free trial at plantoeat.com/timecrafting. That's plantoeat.com/timecrafting. The coupon will be automatically applied to your account and can be used when you're ready to subscribe. It's valid for new customers only. Give Plan to Eat a try today.
I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast. Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Vardy, and this week on the show, I have Tim Grawl joining me. He's the author of several books, but his most recent that we're going to discuss is Running Down a Dream. Now, right out of the gate, I want to share with you that this conversation was a fantastic one. Tim and I have known each other for a few years now, and it was one of these conversations I was really looking forward to bringing to you on the podcast today. That said, when I first started chatting with Tim, my microphone settings in Skype went a bit askew, and so you'll hear the first part of this interview is going to have a shallower side of my conversation, the microphone quality. It's because it's recording it on my onboard mic. We correct that later. I caught that later, so you'll catch that. But I just wanted to share that with you right out of the gate. I hope it's not too distracting, but I didn't want to lose this discussion because it's I think it's a really good one. So we're going to dive into a whole bunch of conversation. Let's just get into it. Now that you know what you're in for, a little bit in terms of the sound quality, let's get into the actual content quality here with my conversation with Tim Grawl here on the Productivityist Podcast.
I'd like to welcome Tim Grawl to the Productivityist podcast. Tim, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to it.
I know. It's been something we've been trying to work on for a long time coming. So the book that you have out now, the most recent book, and of course I'm trying to get the subtitle in iBooks, but it's not helping me out too much. It's Running Down a Dream. What's the subtitle?
Your roadmap to I should know this. Man, like as you started talking, I was like, well, shit, I don't know if I know the subtitle. It's Your Roadmap to Winning Creative Battles. That's awesome. What it is.
And I had a chance to read this book months ago when you were kind of passing it around. And I have to say that as I was going through it, I'm sure this is not the first time that someone has said this to you, but I felt like, wait a minute, is this about me? Like, there's elements of this book that are totally personal. For you, obviously, they're personal stories, but I could totally relate to them. Now, I'm going to ask some of the initial questions that you probably get all the time, but we'll dive into some other interesting stuff related to productivity for sure. But what was the reason behind you putting this book out there, considering some of the other books you've had, you know, your first 1,000 copies, all that stuff? What was the impetus behind writing this book?
So a couple of years ago, I reread The War of Art like I do every year. And I got to the last page, and on the very last page of The War of Art, it's like the third paragraph or something. It's just one line. It says, do it or don't do it. And when I read that, I remembered, you know, 10 years ago when I was really struggling to get anything done. And I was so wrapped up in my own like worry and fear and what Steve Pressfield calls resistance, that I couldn't get my work done. I would like waste the day playing video games or talking to friends or just, you know, reading about doing work and not doing work. And so I remembered like feeling, reading that line and just being like, well, what if I can't do it? And so over the years, I had put together a bunch of like little tools and checklists and kind of things I've used to overcome creative resistance so I could actually get my work done. And I was just going to basically release like, it was going to be the how-to guide to The War of Art. And I wrote an entire draft 2 years ago, two years before the book came out. And I sent it to a couple people. And one was Jeff Goins, and he said, you have a great collection of blog posts here, but this isn't a book. And then my editor, Sean Coyne, looked at it and said, this is a book that people will read about half of, put on their shelf, and immediately forget. And I'm like, well, that's not what I'm going for. And so I worked on it off and on for a long time, and I would rewrite portions. And Sean, my editor, just kept kind of telling me I was missing it and to keep diving in and keep working on it. And then I finally realized, you know, my previous two books are about book marketing and all the work I've done in book marketing. And it kind of had this like, I sit up on a hill, I'm the guru on the hill handing down the knowledge. And instead, this book became kind of a tour of the ruins. And it was just, I realized I needed to tell, you know, the capital T true story of what the last 10 to 12 years have been like for me as I ran down my dream. And I was able to share the tools, but I also got to share the stories of where the tools came from. And pretty much everyone came from a really painful moment of hitting a wall and feeling broken and trying to figure out what was going on. So it started with this simple idea of I was going to, you know, help writers and or help, you know, creative people with these tools. And then it blossomed into almost a memoir about how I found these tools.
You know, as you know, you're talking about this and, you know, blogging it, the blog posts and a book are different. I mean, and you can tell when a book has been written by someone who that, you know, that's a blogger versus being an author. I think that there's an evolution that takes place there. Right. I think working with an editor and with getting feedback like you did from Jeff and from Sean really helps. Now, what's interesting about you mentioned Jeff and recently and again, you know, by the time people are listening to this, it could maybe not be recently, but Jeff put something on Facebook, which I found interesting. And he said, God, I hate social media.
And you mentioned in the book that there's a point where you started cutting out some of your inefficiencies. Some of those things are based on a story that about your father, which I don't want to spoil at all. But I want to talk a little bit about that inefficiency that can be social media. What are your thoughts on, like, because you left social media, you just stopped posting, and you said, like, well, tell everybody, what happened when you said, you know what, I'm not going to post to social media regularly, I'm going to focus on the work, I'm going to do the things that are deeper, rather than maybe some of the shallower stuff, or the stuff where I'm going to do a lot of saying instead of a lot of doing?
Yeah, what happened was nothing happened. You know, I don't know what I imagined would go wrong, but nothing bad happened. In fact, you know, on the scale, lots of good things happened because I was able to finally focus on what I was doing and not worry about putting stuff on social media. And, you know, I think it's important that people just think about, make sure they're telling themselves the truth about what's going on with their social media. Because, you know, I'll get on this rant about, you know, social media is a waste of time and like all this kind of stuff. And people are like, yeah, but I enjoy it. It's like, okay, well, you know, I enjoy watching TV. I enjoy, you know, doing jujitsu. Like there's lots of things I enjoy, but I don't call any of those things work, right? I don't tell myself that, you know, watching TV on Friday night is me like studying stories so I can become a better writer. Like, no, I just do this for fun. But so many people think they're working when they're on social media, and it's just not work. It's not, it's rarely getting you what you think it's getting you.
Unless your job is to actually do social media. Unless that is your,
yeah.
It's kind of like when people say, when you say, you know, well, I can't spend all day in my email inbox. To most people, but some people, they are customer service reps, and literally all of their emails are related to customer service. Well, there are exceptions to the rule, but by and large, what you're saying is absolutely spot on.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's, yeah, if you're getting paid by company X to be running their social media accounts, don't cut social media out. But yeah, it's just, you know, I feel like, one, always trying to be honest with yourself about why you're doing what you're doing. And number two, constantly experimenting with just like, you know, hardcore cutting things out of your life and waiting for something to go wrong, right? Like, I don't watch the news. I don't read the news. And nothing ever really goes wrong. I just, you know, I told my wife, I said, let me know when it's time to vote again, and I'll figure out who to vote for. And then let me know when Trump's not president anymore, and then I can pay attention to some news again. But otherwise, I'm just not paying attention. And nothing goes wrong in my life. And really what happens is my anxiety goes down. I have less to think about. I have less to worry about. And so I just feel like, you know, being constantly experimenting with just cutting things out of your life and doing it until something goes wrong. Because most of the time, like, there's so few things that you can't go back on in your life. It's like having kids and like jumping off a roof. Otherwise, like, you can try something out, and if it doesn't work, just go back and fix it and apologize and do it differently. Mm-hmm. So that's what I kind of look at social media as, just this thing that, you know, just be honest about why you're doing it and making sure that it's getting you where you actually want to go.
Well, you talk about in the book also about having some time blocks put in place. And the block you're talking, I'm going to refer to specifically, is the writing block, where you said from 9 to 10, that's what you do. I call those horizontal themes, because that way they go, basically they're themed across, you know, either all of your work week, say 5 days a week, or maybe you do it all 7 days a week. And I mean, people can do that with things like social media or whatever, even the stuff, like you said, that's not work. It's really interesting. Casey Neistat talks about, like, there's no such thing as free time. And I tend to agree with that on its face, because I think if you let your time be free, then you tend to lose control of it a little bit, because that's when you can get pulled in directions that you don't necessarily want to go in. And is that why you said, hey, you know what, I need to make this decision to say, hey, I'm going to set aside this very specific time to do writing, and then maybe this specific time to do X, or maybe this specific day, which is when I talk about daily themes, like, to focus on this particular type of activity? Is that kind of what led you, like, the idea that your time was being not corrupted or co-opted, but kind of you realize that it was a resource that you weren't tapping into as much as you should be?
Well, at the time, I was running a consultant firm full-time, and it was a more than full-time job. You know, I was just – I was working a ton, and every hour was filled up with stuff to do. And so this is almost like what we talked about with cutting things out, is I was like, I'm just going to put a meeting on the calendar from – I think it was 9 to 10 in the morning – where this is my writing time, and but I'm going to pretend like it's a meeting. So if a client says, hey, can I talk to you at 9 o'clock? I'll say, oh, no, I've got another meeting there. Can we talk at such and such time? And just treat it like that. And it was my way of kind of like elbowing space into a calendar that was always full with stuff. Mm-hmm. And so now it's a little different because writing is more a part of my job. And so I have to, my productivity and calendar look a little bit different, but it was just my way of just like shoehorning something into my calendar that wasn't going to happen naturally. And again, this is, you know, this is like looking, I kept saying I wanted to write, and yet a month would go by and I hadn't written anything. So it's like, okay, what can I do to kind of force myself to at least give this a real try? And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to put it on the calendar. And again, it's like, I'll just put it on the calendar until something blows up. And of course, nothing blew up and I was able to keep writing. But it was just another experiment to see, okay, maybe this will get me to actually start writing. And so, yeah, I mean, I still do that for certain things. If I just realize, like, if I don't set a time, I'm not going to do it. And so I just start setting times so that I kind of make a deal with myself to show up.
So as we go through the book, you think that this journey is right at the beginning. It's like, you know, this is what I'm struggling with and I'm going to start chasing this dream. And it, the way that you've written is what I love about it is it's not like it's this climb without pitfalls along the way. And I have to say the way that you've crafted it, you know, when you're watching a movie or you're seeing you're watching maybe some live sporting event. And things are going so well, and then they don't. And then you're like, oh, look, they're making it, and then they don't. It seems like that happened to you several times while you were running down the dream. Like, how many times did it happen in the book where I'm like, oh, Tim fell down again? Or, Tim isn't satisfied. Like, was it a combination of, like, both falling down and not being satisfied? Like, that journey, it's like that graph that says, you know, the what the journey actually looks like versus what people think it is. Was that, you know, you probably still have that too, where it's like, you know, there are some times where you fall down. When people read this book, what do you want them? What feeling is that a feeling that you wanted them to get, where it's like they're rooting for you, and they see themselves in that situation too, like I did. But also, it's like, man, how many times are you gonna fall down? And be able to keep going.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, a lot of times when you read a book, and this is probably how it should be, but a lot of times what you read is like in the opening chapter, it's like, hey, this really bad thing happened in it. And this is where I had this new awareness of this new way of doing things. And then the rest of the book is teaching you what you learned. And, you know, that's not how life works. How life works is it's these like incremental changes that are usually brought on by something painful, right? When we're not in pain, we tend to not change because mm-hmm. it seems like everything's going fine. So why change? And so I kind of wanted to give what it really looks like. And my goal here was, so Sean always says that, universality comes from specificity. So specificity leads to universality. And what he means by that is the more specific a story, the more universal it becomes. Because it kind of seems counterintuitive, right? We would think, well, we need to keep things broad so more people think it's for them. And in storytelling, it's the opposite. The more like specific you are with your story, the more people see themselves in it. And so one of the things I wanted people to understand is that if you are failing repeatedly, it probably means you're on the right path, not the wrong path, because that is usually how things go. You know, if you look behind all the creative people I've gotten to work with behind the scenes, it is devastating failure after devastating failure. And then from time to time, something works. And I feel like that's how most people build something meaningful. And so, of course, like I said, I didn't set out to write this story this way. But as I began telling the story, it felt like I wanted people to read this and think, oh my God, like I'm normal. You know, like the fact that I've been working on this for 6 years and barely gotten any traction. Okay, that happened to Tim too. Like maybe this is more normal than I tell myself, because most of the stories we hear are like, oh, things kind of used to suck and then they got better, right? And I'm like, and my story is things sucked. I got a little bit better. Then they sucked again. And then they got a little bit better. And then they sucked again. And I always felt like something was wrong with me. Mm-hmm. But as I began to hear other people's stories, I'm like, no, my story is normal. But it's not the story that you usually hear or read.
You know, as I'm remembering our conversation that we had when we were sitting in Nashville, you know, after the first Tribe conference that I went to, I think it was like the second one, and you and I hung out for, I think we were there for what, like 3 hours or something like that. It was a long
time. Yeah, yeah.
We were there for a while. Yeah. And I'm thinking about, you know, when I, the people that you surround yourself with and the conversations that you have with people who get you, quote, end quote, you know, the idea that, cause I mean, in where I live, in Victoria, there are a few, online entrepreneurs, but they're not as vocal or as out there as say people that I run into when I go to these conferences. And you and I have talked about, like, you talk about the World Domination Summit in the book, which, you know, I've attended many times and you've attended several times as well. How important is it when you are running down your dream for you to not only surround yourself with the right people, but also make sure that you leverage isn't the right word, but I'm going to use it anyways. I think it's just probably the one that comes to mind. Leverage those relationships along the way.
Well, I feel like, because I know that word leverage feels a little weird when you think about relationships, but I look at it more as like I'm trying to just become friends with other people that are interested in the same stuff as me. Mm-hmm. And then we're all going to help each other, right? So it's like, you know, I'm going to help you when you need something from me. And, you know, I'm assuming when I need something from Mike, he'll have me on his podcast. You know, like it's that kind of thing. And I feel like it's important. It's important from a practical reason, like we just said, of like, you know, helping each other and having, you know, promoting each other and that kind of thing. But the other is like just feeling normal, right?
Human, like it's a human thing, right?
Well, I think so. I used to live up till a few years ago. I live in Nashville now. I used to live in this small city in Virginia, and there was just nobody that did what I did. So nobody really understood what I was trying to do. Nobody really got it. You know, the people that did work for themselves usually like had bought a franchise or were like, you know, just, you know, not really trying to build something, you know, and run down something interesting. And so I often just felt kind of alone, right? And so at one point, I just reached out to a handful of people I'd met over the years that I also knew lived in towns that were kind of out of the way. And was like, hey, can we just be in a group together where we just talk and help each other? And there were like, we started this Slack group, and this was early on with Slack. And there would be days that we didn't even talk, but I would leave Slack open. And I could see all the little green dots by each of them. And so it's like, I'm not alone. Like they're working too. Like we're here doing this thing. We're all trying to do something interesting here. And so I find that, you know, surrounding yourself with other people that are running down a similar dream is helpful, not just because you can help each other, because it allows you to feel like, you know, we're in this together, and we're all trying to do something interesting here. And so, you know, we're going to get there together, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. What did it feel like when you're done the book? Like as you get to the end of the actual book, reading it, I would imagine, and again, no spoilers, I would imagine that you kind of felt the same way that you intimated at the end of the actual book itself. How did you feel when the book was done? You're holding on to it. Or I guess that's a whole different phase. But when you're done the book versus holding on to it, versus like, how did that feel knowing that maybe that was like, that's just part of the journey along the way?
You know, it was weird because how I finally cracked the book is I was talking with Sean. We were doing our podcast. We run the Story Grid podcast where he teaches me how to write. And we finally like cracked the book when I figured out I needed to start with the painful stories, right? The whole thing, like I said, if I'm not the guru on the hill, we're going to tour my ruins. And so writing the book, I actually, the version of the book that became the final book, I wrote in like 3.5 weeks. It just, as soon as I cracked what it was, I just wrote the whole thing down and kind of, you know, almost in one sitting is what it felt like. But each morning I would drop my kids off at school and then I'm driving into the office and I would literally be thinking, okay, what painful story from my past am I going to write about today? And I would be looking at like all the tools that I wanted to share and I would try to remember what kind of led to these things. And so I was having to go back and relive things that I have actively not thought about in years.
Right.
You know, possibly even
resisted.
Oh yeah. Like these are things like, you know, I tried to bury these memories. So, cause they're not fun. It's things like when the IRS, you know, sent a sheriff to my house with a subpoena, when, you know, my wife had to like take our baby son out of the cart and leave all the groceries behind cause we didn't have enough money in the checking account.
Just to let everybody know that, that's listening. If you're listening right now, like the stuff that Tim's mentioning right now are things that you would have heard in our conversation at Pinewood Social. Like, that's how personal it got. Like, two guys talking, and he's now revealing them in the printed word. So it wasn't like you were more than willing to be open and vulnerable with this book.
Yeah, and so, like, and there were several times where I'm literally, like, typing it, and I'm just crying because I just was remembering what it was like to be in these just horrible places. And so when I finished the book, I literally like wrote the final chapter and I knew it was done. Like this thing I'd been working on for 2 years. And every time I would write parts of it, I'm like, God, it's not good enough. I knew it wasn't there. Like I finished the book and I hadn't shown any of it to Sean. And I'm like, this book is done. Like I finally did it. And so it just felt like, it just felt very good. It was also, I also knew before anybody had seen it, I was like, this is the best writing I've ever done. Like, this is the best thing I've ever created. I just knew it in my gut. And so it was this very kind of release of both sharing all of these stories that I'd kind of kept secret for so long, and also finishing something that I knew I was going to be just extremely proud of. And so those things together, when it was done, it just felt like this release of something that was really meaningful in a way that I don't think I've ever experienced in anything else that I've done. So it was just very cathartic. It felt very good. And it felt like I had done, it's hard to put into words, but it's like I had set out to do this thing and I had done it.
So this running down a dream ultimately it's your story. Although again, there are so many people that can say, hey, you know what? This is totally relatable, which is exactly the kind of thing you want to be able to do as an author. But what about the people who are like, this is all well and good, Tim, but, I'm not a writer. Like, I'm not trying to write a book. I'm not trying to that's not what my dream is. And maybe that's not, and I want it, let's be clear. You can clarify. Is that the dream that we were talking about, or is there a much bigger dream? So first off, people who are not trying to write a book, what are some of the lessons that they can learn from the book? And also, is writing the book, I'm sure, was not the total dream, but I'm sure it was part of it, right? So that's a two-part question there.
Well, you know, I did not set out to become a writer, right? So most of the stories in the book are not necessarily about becoming a writer. It's about You know, my dream, I never had this dream. You know, I feel like some people like know they're going to build a business or they know they're going to be a writer. And I just knew I wanted to do something. I mean, I don't know how, it just felt very vague. It always has, it still feels vague, but I knew what it would feel like when I got there. Like I knew I would know once I got there. And I feel like that's what a lot of people experience is like, they just want to release whatever inside of them. And whether that's writing, whether that's singing, whether that's painting, whether that's creating a company, whatever it is, it's about not settling for the easy thing, not settling for, you know, what your parents did, or, you know, not settling for the expectations of other people, but deciding like, I have this thing that I want to do and I'm going to go do it come hell or high water. And so that's what I feel like the book is about. And while some of the book is about my journey as a writer, there's no writing advice in it. It's about this idea of I'm setting out to run down this dream that nobody else but me understands, nobody else but me is responsible for, and I'm going to do this or I'm going to die in the process. And so I feel like that's who I was writing it for, is for all of us that are setting out to do this thing that only we really understand why we have to do it. And so that's what I wrote the whole first part of the book is about me just starting a company and quitting my job. Like there's nothing about writing in there. And I think it's, and I've already had like people that have reached out to me that are painters, that are singers, that are songwriters, that are like, that have read the book and are like, I felt like you were telling my story, the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I wanted to do, was like create something that was both practical, gives you practical things to do to get your work done and get it out in the world, but also give you something relatable. So you feel like, okay, my hope is that people can say, well, if Tim can do this, I can do this too.
Right. Right. Now I want to talk a little bit more about inefficiencies and dive a little bit into productivity a bit more. So first off, we're recording a podcast right now, and in the past, what I would do is I would make notes as the podcast is going on, as I'm talking to the guest. I've got my notebook in front of me. I've got a pen. Sometimes I do it, but I don't do it as much anymore, because what I like to do now is I like to go back and listen to the entire interview so that I'm fully present right now chatting with you, and then later I'm fully present listening to us talk, so I could figure out, hey, here's what needs to happen. Here's this, here's that. I don't qualify that as an inefficiency. I used to. I used to be like, okay, I need to maximize my time here. So as Tim and I are talking, I'm going to make notes and make bullet points and all that stuff. Would you put yourself in my shoes? Okay. So how have you evolved, number one, what you believe was an inefficiency and turns out it's not, like, and where do you decide that exists? Like for me, again, this is a line I've drawn in the sand to say, you know what? I want to make the best podcast episode possible. So therefore, taking notes during the episode is actually doing a disservice more than a service. So I'm going to, you know, sacrifice or compromise or dedicate the time to actually recording it and then dedicating another hour to listening to it later. So where did you say, hey, you know what, this is no longer this, I thought this was an inefficiency, it's not, or hey, this, I thought this was something I needed to do, but it's rather inefficient. Like how do you make that distinction?
Well, I feel like what you're talking about is actually focusing on what you're trying to accomplish, right? So I'm about to start working with a new contractor, and he sent me his hourly rate, and I said, dude, I don't care what you like, I don't want to buy your time. I want to buy what you're due for me. Like I want you to, you know, set up my website. Let's say it's building a website. I don't care how long that takes you. I need a website. That's what I'm paying for. Mm-hmm. And so then I said, and if you do this, it is this valuable to me. And I gave him a price and I said, will you do it for that price? And he said, yes. Right. So I don't care if it takes him an hour, 5 hours, 20 hours, 50 hours. If I get the thing, you know, I don't ask, I don't wonder as I go to the store and buy a new coffee maker how long they put into making that coffee maker. I'm going to spend as much money as is valuable to me to make coffee, right?
Right.
And so, which is really high, but that's a separate thing. So what you're saying is the most valuable thing to you is to create the best podcast you can. And the most efficient way to do that is to not take notes during the event and then re-listen and take your notes then. Right. So you are actually increasing your efficiency by taking a longer period of time to do it because you have a bigger goal than doing it in a tight amount of time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how I kind of look at things is, you know, I don't judge my writing by how many words I output because that's not what really matters. I judge my writing by like, did I say what I was trying to say? Did I move the project forward today? You know, did I, you know, get out, you know, even if I only wrote 300 words, was it the right 300 words? And I look at other things that aren't important as that's where I make up any quote inefficiencies, right? So I don't, you know, like we order meals, you know, I have automated things for my calendar, all this stuff that doesn't actually matter. I try to automate that, get that off my plate, figure out all that stuff. And everything dies to the work,
right?
You know, what am I trying to create? What is the best way to create those things? And I'm going to do whatever it takes to create that thing, right? Like running down a dream, I could have published it a year and a half earlier. Like the book was done, but it wasn't what I wanted it to be yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took another year and a half. I mean, the book's only, I think, like 40,000 words, but I wrote over 120,000 words and I threw it all away because it wasn't good enough. Now, was that inefficient? Okay, maybe. But what it was what it took to create the thing I'm trying to create. And so I think some people, and I've done, you know, we've all fallen in this trap of just like being as efficient as possible. You know, the most efficient way to get my kids to school would be to like hire somebody to drive them to school for me. But then I would miss all of that time sitting with them in the car talking.
Right.
Right. So it's like it is extremely inefficient for me to drive them to school. And yet I do it anyway because I have a higher goal. So I think always being very clear on what you're trying to accomplish and then, you know, you do what it takes to serve that thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That to me is the important thing, right? This is why like I hire people to clean my house because I don't care about that. And like me cleaning the house is not getting me anything anywhere closer to something I want in life. You
right.
know, it's just this annoying thing that needs to be done. So I don't do it anymore. And so, so it's those kind of things, you know, just like it's not, I don't judge efficiency just by how much time something makes. It's how is it getting me to create the thing that I want to create?
Right, right. So it's basically driven by intention like that. And I think that's a really important distinction because I think a lot of people look for how to be more efficient and they think that productivity is derived by efficiency and effectiveness. And you could be efficient about the wrong things and you could be effective about the wrong things. But ultimately, it's about, hey, what are you ultimately trying? Like, what's your objective? Like, what are you trying to accomplish, whether it's in the short term or the long term or in the in-between term, whatever. It's so, I mean, again, and it's funny because we all get caught in that trap. Me saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to take notes during this because I want to make sure I'm being more efficient. And then realizing, you know what? I'm not doing as good a job with making the podcast what it could, should, and can be. And like you said, writing 120,000 words and tossing them away to ultimately end up with the book you really wanted, the book that you not only you are happy with, but, you know, countless others are happy with, I think it is really an important distinction. Now, you talk about the writing time between 9 and 10 and how making that habitual is really important. Are you a routines driven type of person? You mentioned, you know, like some, like one of the things I do every Wednesday, which is my podcast. I do this every day of the week, but I know that I set up my clothes the night before every single day. And I actually have gone one step beyond that, possibly crazy, but I do this anyways, is I have different t-shirts that I know have different meanings. So they are worn on very specific days of the week. So for example, right now I'm wearing my Black Bolt, Marvel Black Bolt t-shirt, because today's my audio day, and Black Bolt's power is that if he uses his voice, then he can do a lot of damage. That's his superpower. So that to me is relationship to my audio day, which is Wednesday. I know, super nerdy, but it makes it so that I don't have to think about what shirt I will wear Wednesday. And I actually have a second shirt that I wear Wednesday too that's also related to audio. So every day of the week I have like shirts that, like my ConvertKit shirts, Teach Everything You Know. Thursday is my training day. I wear that shirt because that's the shirt that makes sense on that day. Do you have routines in place, number one? And do you have triggers like I do that allow you to remove those, eliminate decision fatigue, or at least lessen it a bit?
Yeah. You know, I talk about this in the book a little bit about trying to make as many decisions for the future version of myself as possible.
Right.
So I was actually today, I was talking to a buddy of mine who's a musician, and I was telling him how like trying to live his life would drive me insane. Cause it's like, he won't have anything to do for 2 days and then he'll be up till 1 a.m. playing a gig. And it's like all random. And, you know, my schedule is extremely regimented. Like probably 90% of the time, you could, like, I'm in the same place the same day at the same time every time, like whether it's working out, picking up my kids, working, writing, you know, I might switch coffee shops. Otherwise, I don't even have to think about my day. It's already planned. I do a similar thing with clothes, not quite as nerdy as yours, but I literally have 2 pairs of jeans and about 10 or 12 different colors of the same t-shirt from Target. And I have a couple different pairs of shoes, and I literally just jeans, shirt, shoes, like every day, yep. Same thing. I do the same thing with meals. I do the same thing. And this is what we're talking about a minute ago, of these things are not important.
Right.
What I wear every day is not important. Trying to decide how to spend my time each day is not what I need to be spending my time on. So that stuff I ruthlessly create efficiency around.
And by the way, just to harken back to something you said earlier about social media and what happened when you stopped posting to social media, nothing. Like, people don't look at you and go, wow, Tim, you wear the same clothes every day and I'm not going to work with you, or I'm not going to follow you. Like, no one cares about stuff, right? Like, so yeah. It truly is not important. I mean, there's reasons why capsule wardrobes are a big deal right now, because people are like 33 articles of clothes. No one pays attention. Like, wow, that's a completely different outfit that you wore. You've not been wearing the same outfit for 43 days straight. That's amazing. No one pays attention to that crap.
Well, and I want to distinguish here between like, if you think it's important, that's fine.
Right.
Just understand that you're doing it because you want to, which, you know, I think a lot of times when we get into this efficiency productivity thing, we start feeling like just because we want to do something is not a good enough reason to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing is like, look, do whatever you want. Just tell yourself the truth about it.
Right.
Right. So if it makes you feel good to spend 45 minutes getting ready in the morning, do it.
Yep.
Just know you're doing it for you, not for other people, or it's not going to like get you clients or whatever. It's just for you, which is fine. That's a good enough reason. Just tell yourself the truth. Because if you're not telling yourself the truth, you'll end up doing a bunch of stuff you don't actually want to do, thinking it's accomplishing something, but not being clear on it.
Right. Like my wife thinks I'm absolutely crazy to have these shirts that are themed. And she goes, why do you do that? I'm like, there was a point in time where I actually stopped. And I said, you know what? Like, it's bothering her. I'm going to stop. But then what happened is it actually affected me beyond that point. Like, I'm like, you know, because what would happen is I'd put on this Wednesday shirt, which meant it was audio day, which meant I would do audio work. So it like literally like drove me and funneled my focus to that particular type of activity. And one day I just said, you know what, screw it. I'm going to do it anyway. I mean, this is not grounds for divorce kind of thing. You know, like, it's not like I'm going to, it's, I mean, I do have a moratorium on shirts I can buy. I'm like, oh, look, it's, I mean, I recently bought the Houston Astros dream crushing shirt because they had this meme and I'm a big Astros fan. And she's like, is this the last one? I'm like, yeah, because I can wear it on Friday because Friday is my deep work day and it allows me to crush my dreams and stuff like that. She goes, okay, seriously though, like you can't, like, because you don't want to have five different shirts that you could wear every single day because they all could fall into those different themes. She goes, so like, let's make a decision around how many t-shirts options you have per day. So you can go too far, but also, like you said, like if it's important to you, don't give that up, but understand like that's, there's a reason behind it and be honest with yourself about it. Because if you're not, and the other thing I think too, Tim, is that you, if you're going to spend 45 minutes getting ready, then you have to understand that there might be other things that you need to cut or be more efficient about. So that, and I don't know what those would be. Only the person getting ready for 45 minutes would know that. But I think it's important to look for those things too, right? Like understand it and be aware. So you could say, hey, you know what? I'm taking 45 minutes to get ready. So either that means I have to get up earlier, or maybe that means I can't do this, or I shouldn't do this. Like, I think that this is a lifestyle thing. It's not just a one and done thing.
Yeah. And I, you know, the other thing that I tend to do is I do things, in kind of cycles. So I'll be living my life for a while and then I'll be like, okay, let me really look at my life and figure out if there's some inefficiencies in here that I can clean up.
Right.
And so, you know, I can't always, I have to like use the system long enough to see if it's working for me before I start. I don't want to constantly be in this. My buddy used to call it productivity porn.
Yep.
Where it's like, I'm constantly like cutting and cutting and figuring out and figuring out. It's like, I'm going to make, and this is what I tell people, is like, make a decision, do it that way for 6 months, mm-hmm. and then change.
Yep.
If you want to change. And so I think that, you know, just, it's a long thing. And I talk about some very, I have some really, like detailed tools on how to like find inefficiencies in your life in the book. But I still do those from time to time of like, okay, let me, you know, I've been coasting for a while. Let me take a hard look at what I'm doing. Or like things aren't working. Like right now with promoting the book, I'm basically doing podcasts constantly. And I'm all of a sudden like, man, like I'm looking at my day and my day is full of, hour and 30 minute gaps,
right,
which is like useless for getting actual work done. And so I'm like, okay, maybe I need to like start only doing podcasts on Thursday, Friday, but I'm going to coast like this for a couple months and then I'll make a decision if I need to make a decision, right? So it's like not constantly, you know, churning on this stuff because you can get worn out on it, but just like keeping an eye on like, am I getting my work done? Like, what is the most important things? Like, are those things getting done? If they're not, maybe I need to look at something. But also, you know, every day I work out. And because I really enjoy working out. And so that's in the middle of the day. I have to stop what I'm doing, get in the car and drive and then do it and come back to the office. But it's like, that is really important to me and I enjoy it. And so that's when I do it. So I think it's obviously with all this stuff, it's balance, but I don't even think of it as balance as like, what are the most important things and are those things happening? And anything else that doesn't get done, most of the time nothing bad happens.
Right. Right. And well, and it, again, you talk about like changing when you need to change. Using a baseball metaphor or analogy, if a hitter is hitting well, don't change the stance. Like everything should stay the same. But once they go into a slump, it's like, okay, should we look at the way your stance is? Like how do we change your, because something is wrong right now, so let's fix it. But as long as things are working well, yeah, you don't want to mess with a good thing. And yeah, productivity porn, big problem, stuff that we've talked about quite a bit on here. And I'd love to talk to you more about this stuff in the future, but I got to let you go because, frankly, it's the middle of the afternoon and it's time for me to go do my workout as well because I'm starting to get back into that. Tim, thanks so much for taking the time today. Where can people pick up your book? And is there anything else that you want to quickly plug before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I mean, the book's, you know, sold online everywhere you buy books. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera. You can see everything that I do at runningdownadream.com.
Thanks again for joining me today on the Productivities Podcast, Tim. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
I told you.
Great conversation, as always, with my friend Tim Grawl. You can find everything that we discussed in the show notes, no matter where you're listening to the podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever that's happening, you can grab the show notes there. And, you know, again, I want to thank you for listening because, you know, and I hope that you take a lot of the stuff that Tim talked about if you are trying to run down your own dream and, you know, take some of those things that he talked about and put them into action because, you know, as someone who, like I said during the discussion, I felt like it was kind of like my story as well. I think, you know, a lot of people that you would never have expected to go through those stories, either they share them overtly or they keep them kind of hidden or quiet. I think it's important to hear those stories and to know that, you know, you're not that far away from those people that you're looking at going, wow, they've got all their stuff together. So again, big thanks to Tim for joining me this week on the show. Big thanks to John Polster for producing the show. Big thanks to all of the patrons supporting the show. And if you are a patron, of course, you know, I thank you for your continued support. If you want to learn more about that, go to productivityist.com/membership. You can learn more about that. And if you want to become a member, you can do that. But if you just want to rate and review the show, and again, keeping the microphone quality aside, believe me, I know that that's something that would affect things over the long term. But if you're enjoying the show, this is not your first episode you've listened to, or you want to listen to more, then subscribe. And if you really like the show, then rate and review the show and wherever you listen to podcasts. It just helps people find the show. It helps me and John make the show better. And that's really what we want to do here. So again, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of the Productivityist Podcast, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.